Prior to that, my career was in the business world. I graduated in forestry and spent my life in the world of timber and chemicals that are injected into timber to preserve it from decay and termite attack. My problem is the chemical I was working with was too poisonous for today's ecological world and has been somewhat sidetracked. Chemical is pentachlorophenol, penta. Those of you who live on farms probably heard of it. And it was now it's a restricted use pesticide, so that falls into a different category than normal use chemical. But nevertheless, any of the utility poles you see around America are treated with pentachlorophenol.
Say that slowly.
Pentachlorophenol. You take phenol and chlorinate it, it's a reaction process. And it is a poisonous chemical, I guess, to be poisonous to all the enemies of wood, it would have to be pretty strong. So I thought what we'd do today, we got about a 45-minute session. I'd like to break it into three categories. We'll talk about basic resources first, and the title of our talk today is Renewable Resources. The one that is renewable is wood of the basic resources. And we'll talk about that, we'll talk about forestry, advancements there, and then a little bit of the Christian responsibility to face the word that we hear everywhere now, sustainability. And we'll kind of break our period into those three categories. And I like to get the people that are here to participate with me, so I've just put down the basic resources that we have to deal with. The obvious ones are, what, oil, coal, various minerals, iron ore, and so on and so forth, and trees. Now, the one of those that's renewable, we know, is trees, renewable. Now, I'm going to ask you to name a few other resources.
Solar.
Solar. I'll put that up here. Pardon me?
Water.
Water, that's a big one, isn't it?
Oh,
let's talk about water for a minute.
Yeah.
Is it renewable?
Yeah, sure.
We hope it is. I've got a lot of literature here that I'll introduce you to as we go along, but the water is going to be the deciding factor in much of what's going to happen, the diversity and everything else in the years ahead. Mm-hmm. And particularly out here in the West, I think if you read the publications on water, the amount that's used for agriculture in California, on the desert we've captured, and all areas like that, Phoenix, and places that are really built in the desert, why water is the one big factor that's going to be determining how we end up and how we use the resources we have. So we can say water is renewable. What are some other resources we have? Air, of course. We can pollute our air, so we can't use that at times, too. What?
Corn.
All the agricultural crops. That's a little different category, but let's just put it down here, agriculture.
Wind?
Agriculture, though, it needs water, though.
Yeah. We've got ethanol plants up our wood.
You call wind a resource? I guess it is. We got these plantations now that generate electricity. These are wind farms. Is that what you call those?
You put silver up there. I said solar.
You said what?
I said solar. You had silver?
Yeah.
Like the sun is the resource.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, solar.
Yeah. Sun. Solar. Big resource. We assume that'll be with us, don't we?
We hope. For another few billion years in there.
I got to tell you folks a story. I went back and listened to a bunch of old tapes because I've been coming to Poland now for 30 years.
Oh,
my family used to come here. My wife, Betty Olson, was the artist in residence, and we were recapping when we first came here. It was 1967. I said, my gosh, that's 30 years. But anyhow, on those tapes back there, there's always a lot of humor in there. And the one I heard the other day was, about these three Lutheran bishops that died and went to heaven. They got up to Pearly Gates and the computers had broken down. There was a big throng of people there waiting to get in. They were up the head of the line and finally got the computers repaired. And St. Peter went way back to the strongest people, got a young lady and brought her up to the front, put her right through the Golden Gates. And the three bishops protested. He said, we've lived on earth, did a good life and everything, and what's going on here? And he said, listen, she was a bus driver at Holden Village, and she scared the hell out of more people than all three of them put together. I sometimes believe there's a little truth in that story. Yeah?
How about soil? We can soil. We don't have that. We don't have food if it isn't renewed.
What about fertilizers and things like that, and all these things we add to the...
Rotation, this sort of thing.
Rotation, yes.
Yeah, that's another that helps with the soil.
What about land? We going to lose any more land? Is it going to slough away or anything? Or? Some of it's become almost unusable, hasn't it? Some people the other day were telling me about the expansion where we're taking, you know, thousands of acres every week in the development and parking lots and shopping malls and always taking, seems like, the best farmland we have, or the darkest soil and things like that. So we are losing, that's a resource that we're losing some of every year.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be any more land, but it is renewable what we have. We can bring it back. So at any rate, then, these are what we've got to work with. And of the basic resources, trees are the one that we can really work with and reestablish for us. And there's a lot written on that, of course, and we can talk more about it. But here's a booklet put out by World Watch, and it's dated 1988. The whole booklet deals with reforesting the earth, and it has to do with how many billions of acres of timber that have been lost worldwide. And the loss was steady, but in the last 20 years it's been accelerated. You've all read about the cutting down of the rainforest and that type of thing. So we need to think as Christians, what can be done to hold this resource and to replenish it. It's a responsibility we really have. But the replenishing has not been coming worldwide, and the replenishing we're doing in the U.S. is usually beamed at timber supplies and things of that nature, forest products, rather than to create a forest and use it for its many other uses, such as wildlife and water and things like that. And the big question we ask all the time, which is more important, the forest or the trees? That's something to keep in the back of your mind as we visit here today.
Isn't there some debate, though, whether the old growth forests are actually renewable? I mean, when you're talking about cutting down a tree that's 200, 300 years old, I mean, is that our definition really of
old growth, yes.
Renewable, if it will take 300 years to replace that tree?
And I get lost there when you talk over 100 years about anything, even though I'm getting it myself. some of us are better able to comprehend, but when you hear these geologists talk about 10,000 years and all these formations, but if you want to think in those terms, they're renewable. But to cut down our old growth, I think, is a real mistake, because we can live without cutting down every last tree that's growing here. Some of them are 300-400 years old. The redwoods are the first example, of course. But a lot of these beautiful Douglas fir we see around here and the other pine trees are old also. It takes a long time to replenish.
One of the arguments, though, is that what grows there is not conducive to deer. They don't like, you know what I mean? And that's why there was a natural burning off and then these others, the forage for the deer. And I'm not saying that should be widespread, but that was one of the arguments.
Where was that?
Right in the country, I've read about it.
Oh.
You know, that's why, and I'm not talking about the redwoods, but other areas they talk about it, because then there's more forage for the deer, which in the old forest, there isn't.
Oh, I know, we have that in Minnesota. We have a lot of cutover lands in Minnesota. And the new growth provides better.
Yeah.
And the deer population.
Sure.
Is sustained by that. And a fellow was here the other last week, was telling me, he's a Weyerhaeuser executive, so he didn't hear what much I had to say. he said, of course, I've changed too over the period of my career, as have a lot of my classmates in forestry that were big timber guys. Now that they get older, they, hey, maybe there is an end to all this, you know? Better modify our thinking.
How much forest do we need? In the state of Washington, we have 7 national parks that will never be logged or anything.
7 parks? Okay.
And here's what we're doing now. We're developing superior trees that can be logged in 60 years.
Shorter rotation, right.
Yeah.
Weyerhaeuser.
And otherwise, and another thing that we're doing, we're reclaiming all sorts of paper
yep.
products.
Recycling.
And reusing them. And if you don't, what would you do if we didn't do that?
Well, we're finding some places we won't need as much paper. That's with the computer.
I don't know.
I have a lot of questions.
So far, it's been using more than when they started. But a friend of mine's son works for an insurance company, and they told these people, we don't want to see any more file cabinets in these offices. We want everything in those computers. No hard copies floating around here. And of course, you're in the business world, and you know about that, don't you?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Just saving things, well, just even being a student, how much less paper.
Well, I'm so old-fashioned, even when I have things in my computer and my secretaries do, I was telling them, give me a hard copy, I'll put it over here. But I wanted to know how to get it in a hurry.
There might come a time when books will be all on these discs instead of on paper.
We just built a new library at Oxford College, $15 million, and that was a lot of talk going into it. It's nicely divided. One half is computerization and electronics, and the other half is books.
You don't need any paper anymore for card catalogs. Those are things right. Past.
Anyhow, the thing on paper is if we do use a lot less paper, say in office procedures, in that sense, but as the developing countries become more developed, they like to get some Kleenex and things like that too. And that's bringing the demand for paper up very high.
And besides all that we save and with the computer, we get in junk mail.
Yeah.
Every day of the
week. I was thinking about my telephone bill. It used to come in a little card.
No, it's 3 sheets.
3 sheets.
Yeah. How do you like this headline right here? American appetites, 300 shopping bags per person per week.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot.
I can believe it.
I'm not getting my share.
No.
but they say, well, that's the big drain in America.
Sure.
Their demands are so greater. Even we were talking about timber supplies the other day, and they said in housing, the families are getting smaller, and the houses are getting bigger and bigger. You look everywhere, and you see these huge houses for 4 people. But what you say is right. The big question that you hear out here in many places is, how much wilderness is enough wilderness? Because in the wilderness, there's no logging, you know. And that's set aside, and same as the national parks are set aside. Forest is a different story. You have a national forest or state forest, they're managed and logged and so forth.
Our logging practices are tremendous compared to 40 years ago. I remember 40 years ago, no one wanted, Simpson Timber Company was a small diameter log, 12 inches. Now, then they went to 10 inches, then they went to 8 inches, and everybody, what are they going to do with that stuff? Well, now they're down to 2.5.
Is that right?
Yeah.
They can grow 2.5 inches pretty fast. In 1942, I worked for the U.S. Forest Service on the Olympic Peninsula. And we were marking timber as a big harvest. It was the Simpson's Olympic Camp number 5, I think it was near Shelton, Washington, in Woodsport. And they weren't even cutting hemlock at that time. They were so selective, just take the fur and all and so forth. And that all changed in a hurry after the war. But even then, they were beginning, you know, we tried to mark the trees, do some selective logging. They weren't clear cutting out there at that time. But since then, clear cutting is so obvious in the mountain areas. You know, you drive down the highway, you see where there's a clear cut. That disturbs people more than back in Minnesota, those flatter, see? They don't cut within 300 feet of the highway. Mm-hmm. All the logging is done behind the scenery.
Does clear cutting have anything to do with soil preservation?
It has more to do with sunlight needed to regenerate the species.
What about the water washing away the topsoil?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot to do with it.
Sure.
In fact, one of these pamphlets here, this World Watch, I don't know if any of you are familiar with this organization, but they publish annually a report. And they've got a category in here about the amount of runoff and soil loss and topsoil of areas that have been deforested, deforestation, leading to desertation, they call it.
Aren't they replant? I see all these advertising by paper companies where they show how they replant. So
yeah, and you have to replant. And Oregon has a law, I think Washington too, that if you cut a tree, you have to replant. And he's a tree farmer.
Does that take care of the soil loss when you replant?
What did you do before you, along with tree farming? What was your work?
I hate to tell you. I was a...
Let's not go into the whole story.
I was a chef. A chef.
Chef. What's she saying? She's heard it before.
I went to... There was an opening for a catering business for Simpson Timber Company.
Okay.
And then I went down there and I only catered to banquets.
Oh, yeah.
And parties, and you know, then that gave me a lot of time, and somehow or other, somebody twisted my arm, and the first thing I bought was 640 acres of timber, and I paid a tremendous price for that. I think it was $13,000. And it has a lake on it that...
Well, you didn't buy that, you stole it. Now, what's the rest of the story? Wow, that is something. Those of us that didn't buy any land back then were wondering why we didn't. You know, we could have all been cotton and chips now. Well, that's great. That's, and then you got into tree farming from that.
Yes, and then I was Tree for Farmer of the Year.
Yeah, oh, isn't that great?
The state for one of
Washington.
One of them for four. There was four of us. I was one of the four. In the
state. I don't know if everybody in the room is familiar with the American tree farm movement, but every state has a tree farm organization.
Yes.
And there was a woman here yesterday from Portland who works in housekeeping. She used to work for the American tree farm system in Portland, I think. And she was telling about all the state meetings in the state. And I was president of Keep Minnesota Green at one time, and we had a lot of tree farmers in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And the people that do that are very dedicated and sincere and conscientious of what they're doing. They follow guidelines, and they're rated by extension foresters and get management plans. And collectively, the American tree farm movement has done a great deal. It's about 50 years old now, isn't it?
Yes.
And so a lot of planning to
picture. It's growing and growing, and they're doing an excellent job. Really.
Oh, yeah.
We're this day and age, there's a market for most everything, and there's one big company is doing this tree. Well, first, one of the first things that I did, I thought I was doing a great job. I sold poles to the gypsies, and they came every Monday, and that's Blue Monday. You're not, the gypsy will not sell anything on Blue Monday, or it's a curse on that. And I got 10 cents for a 12-foot pole.
Oh.
And, and it was a thinning job.
Sure.
And improved my But this day and age, there's another company now that it's 6 foot long and 2.5 inches, and they're making, they leave part of the stem on, and they boil it, and it never, breaks.
Sure. You just cut.
And then they make it into lovely furniture.
Oh yeah, that's
$1,200 to $1,400 a set.
Wow.
You mentioned the word thinning. All of you may know that when trees grow too close together, they have a thinning operation. They're not deforesting. So.
I've seen some trees around in Holden here that have got paint on them, like blue or red. Does that mean they're going to be cut down, or is that for?
They're marked for some reason. They may be diseased or something. Around here, the first years we were up here, there was a big logging operation going on about mile 4, I think it was. A Swiss logging company. They were using high lead logging. And then down in the lake, they had big rafts of logs that were being rafted down the lake. And that's been kind of obsoleted everywhere now. You don't see many log rafting operations. No. We used to have one in Minnesota where they'd log in Minnesota and then raft it across to the Wisconsin paper mill. Ecologically, that's not a good thing, because the rafts kind of get in the storm, and then a lot of the wood goes free in the lake or down the bottom. Yeah.
On the other hand, trees are a crop. And they should be harvested like any other crop.
Okay.
Because they become dangerous. A wind could blow them over.
Yeah, now first.
We had in Washington State just not too long ago, a fellow was driving through with, there were two men, a woman, and a 4-year-old. A huge tree fell on their pickup and killed all 4 of them. Because of a high wind. Mm-hmm. If that had been harvested when it was time to for it right. to have been harvested, we could have 4 more lives.
The thing to bear in mind is that each species of tree has a different, you know, rotation, length of life. In our country, we have a lot of aspen. Mm-hmm. Aspen gets 80 years old, it has to be, should have been harvested at 70 or 60. Mm-hmm. And now they're finding a good use for aspen. It used to be a weed species in Minnesota, but suddenly, they're using the fiber to make fiber-oriented hardboard. We've got 6 new plants around Minnesota that are putting it out like mad, and aspen is a sprout-generating species that grows very fast, so that's worked out very well, and there's a change in technology that has really aided us. But you're right, trees, when they become mature, should be harvested. But the old growth ones, the ones we're talking about that are 200-300 years old, we're not sure what the... When their maturity is, you know.
They belong in parks.
Yeah, a lot of them. A lot of them are.
Yeah.
But I want to say one word again about the Weyerhaeuser Timber Company, and that represents many of the big timber companies. They've been way ahead of many, many other organizations, both on research and applied research, from what they've learned. They've got some seed sources now. They're putting out what they call the super tree. It grows faster, they fertilize, and they're getting better quality timber quicker than we've ever had in history.
We have actually more forest now than we had when the Pilgrims first landed here.
Well,
is that true?
Depends on where you're talking about, what part of the country, I guess. New York State has got more standing timber now than it had in 1910, because that's very well controlled. Some states don't measure up as well. There's a lot of standing timber, but there we get back again to the size of the timber. And the industry will say, well, we're growing as much every year as we're harvesting, which could be true on a square foot or cubic foot basis. But what we're growing is a lot of small stuff. So it takes 2 years for it. You got a gap in there until it's ready to come on.
Who selects, is a tree specialist that goes around and says that this tree should come down? I wonder how they select those trees that come down.
Extension foresters, most states have extension foresters. Yeah. They can tell when a tree is mature. They can take a boring and get the age of the tree if they want to.
Okay.
Well, you can tell when a tree is about ready. So I was looking at an old guy like me, you can tell that guy's ready for harvest. What about the passion? I'd like to just spend a couple minutes about what I call the advancement. A new sophistication of science. And it isn't that. It's happened fast. As I said, I went to forestry school in, 50 years ago. They had me back for the 50th anniversary. Some of my classmates aren't around any longer, but I'm here. But in just that period of time, 50 years isn't that long, and mainly in the last 30 years, the whole management of forestry has almost changed. We used to go out when we were taking, they call it cruising timber. You go out and we'd take a representative plot of so many square feet and so forth. You'd practically manually, you know, count the trees, the size, the height, and all that, and then you'd expand that to find out how many trees of what species you've got. We do mapping by hand and hiking through the woods and plotting everything. And now we've got satellite imaging. I don't know how many of you have you been using this in agriculture in your communities. And the satellite, the images now, they can check the soil type, the type of forest, the density, the inventory. All of these things, mapping is all done almost instantaneously. Just amazing. So the amount of information we have to work with when we're planning and managing our resource are much, much greater and available on a more economical basis than ever were before. In the database, they've got all of these things, the seed sources, the water availability, the climate information, country by country, acre by acre, county by county. Minnesota has the entire state of Minnesota. They can tell you what's in every 40-acre plot. If you want to locate a new park in Minnesota and you want it near a population center, near some water and so forth, you can just go to the computer and you can get a printout with about 5 suggestions and decide what you want to do. Well, this was available, you know, before. So all of this sophistication is really helping us do a better job, and not only on forestry resource, but on all of our resources, including agriculture generally, and how we use things. Any comments about that? Question?
Yeah, but I think at Sioux Falls, South Dakota, they have a center for that satellite imaging. I don't know if they have it in more places than that, but there's a big center right there.
Yeah.
Farmers use that a lot on their farms.
Yeah.
Where they find out that on this spot you have to have so much fertilizer right over here.
Yeah. I read about that.
More I read about.
Well, they got the mechanism right on the spreader, so as they go down the field,
they don't
change on the amount of square foot they're putting down, so that when you get a certain soil type.
Crop that is very even.
Effective. Yeah. More effective, more economical. You're not wasting fertilizer if you don't need it. Many features like that have come on. Even on fertilizing forest planting, you know, on smaller areas, there's a lot of fertilization. I was in Sweden about 3 years ago. Sweden has the highest production of pulpwood type trees per acre of anywhere in the world. They've had a forestry law since 1903, and it's very, very well enforced, which is the difference of having regulations. And they'll fertilize by air even on those plantations. They use thinning, use cuttings when they need to, but their rate of production in those fields is 2.1 quarts per acre. And in Minnesota, where we've tried as much management as we can manage, but it shows what intensive management can do for you. In Minnesota, we're now up to 3/4 of a quart per acre on a well-managed acre. So you can see the vast difference there.
In Israel, there when you go over there, they always like to have you plant a tree when you're there.
Oh, yeah.
Several, and they have increased the rainfall in Israel over the past few years by planting millions of trees there.
Oh.
And that's also a problem in Arizona because they're getting too much there.
Yeah, that reminds me. Our daughter died some years ago, and some friends planted a tree in memory over there. I guess they have a memory forest. What about, is anyone here from Oregon or Washington, they're planting cottonwood out here now, is it?
They are all Oregon and California.
And it's growing very rapidly, isn't it?
I think it grows. They harvested it about 10 years of age.
Now, we've always had a lot of cottonwood back where we live, but I'm going to tell you, this is a fantastic new development. Plenty of cotton there, and it's just showing up.
Can you raise cottonwood without cotton?
Yeah, there's a species that now you don't have all the cotton plant on. Yeah. Plus the messy.
But we're doing, at this day and age, tremendous things that we never ever thought of 40 years ago.
Yeah. Well, it gives us hope, doesn't it?
Environmentally, what other crops can we grow besides a tree and still have the same effect on the air?
New plantation, that's why, reforesting and planting. Take carbon dioxide out of the air and give us off oxygen.
Yes. Will a cornfield do the same or more?
I don't know. You mean as far as the transfer of the carbon dioxide?
Yeah.
They certainly have a lot of leaves.
Yeah. We look at just the tree to do this for us, but I think a lot of our other agriculture plants
probably
that we place the tree with will do as much or more.
Okay. And you'd think it would be normal.
And one other thing that was down in Costa Rica, and everybody talks about, we got to save the rainforest in Costa Rica. But when you talk with the men that live down by there and try and make a living there, they say you can't make a living in the rainforest.
I think they're doing something with the World Bank to provide other ways for them to earn a living so they don't have to cut down the trees. If they can do that, they can be saved. Otherwise, I don't think they can.
Yeah, I mean, they saved a number of them in parks and percentage-wise. But, in reality, people have to make a living there. And it's a poor agricultural country. And for them in agriculture, very plain and simple.
Once you cut down the trees and they sell those and get rid of those, you have maybe 1 year where you can grow something there, and the soil is so poor.
Not necessarily. Because he survived and farmed on this, right next to the rainforest. So, I mean, that's maybe another conception that we are told that... I realize that your fertility is very narrow in the rainforest, but that's because of the immense amount of rain. The roots don't go deep in the soil to bring up the minerals. And then with other plants, you can accomplish that. But if you're just depending on that organic matter, you see the mass of roots in the rainforest is 10 inches deep or something like that. It's very shallow. Because of the quick recycling of the rain all the time. They don't have to go deeper for their nutrients.
They get it back from their leaves, too, as they
dissolve. Yes, there's no one simple, easy answer, I guess.
Well, I think they could plant different types.
And they do. They are developing teak plantations, like you talked about cottonwood, where they...
Yeah.
I don't know, I forget the number of years, but it's a very short amount of years, and then they try and get this rotation going, so they harvest this then in 9 or 10 years or something, and then they can keep rotating on their small...
You mentioned, rotation, if you got 100,000 acres, say, you plant 10,000, you plant different every 10 years and use a rotation, you harvest one, the other one's back. You got 80 years, you harvest one group every 10 years, and next group, and next group, replant. In Sweden now, they're down to about a 25 or 30 year cycle on pulpwood. And so I was on this one plantation, and they had 10 stands there, and every 5 years you harvest one and plant one, and just went on, and good production. They could make more money off the land in Sweden with trees now than they could with agricultural crops. So they'd gone full cycle. Yeah. These forests have been cut down and made agriculture. Now they're going back from agriculture to wood. And that's might happen some places here, too.
Well, in Minnesota, in our, this is kind of a big major year, a lot of our conservation reserve acres are coming out
in
at the end of this fall now.
That 10 years?
Yes. Yeah. That was 10 years ago was the big year. Well, you can, one of the things they are working on is if you will plant trees on this, that will get your numbers higher so that you perhaps can get it in on the next rebidding.
Okay. Well, they can plant a good, the fast-growing species.
Well, they do the, they've experimented a lot with hybrid popple.
Popple, yeah, okay. And you said the word hybrid, and I just wrote down the word genetics. That's another big breakthrough we've had. There's been great advancement in the forest and tree genetics in the last 25 years. And that's both for quality and sort of durability and rate of growth. The University of Minnesota has some very outstanding research in that category. The other thing, a couple of things I was going to mention, that the mechanization of planting now in Canada, I'd never heard of this before, but they're seeding tree acreages by air seeding. It's been working pretty good just north of Minnesota in that area. They do a lot of clear cutting in Canada. They're not as mindful of everything as we are around here, I guess. The other thing I wanted to bring up a little bit about the, before we go to sustainability, is the sale of logs to other countries, Japan primarily. You're probably aware of this out here. They're selling logs by the thousands and thousands. And Japan is not only buying logs in America, they're buying logs in Indonesia and all over the world. They just have a great need. They don't have the logs at all, so they're in a big building program, and they just buy all species of logs. And I noticed in reading this book the other day that it said, two countries that banned the sale of logs, which many people propose here, you know. Indonesia and Malaysia banned log exports in 1985, and the Philippines followed suit in 1986. And we passed one law, didn't we, about we had to do some manufacturing of the log before we exported it. In Canada, they have a log, something like that, but they kind of get around the law by just slabbing one side or something. The value added for all these third world countries, too, the trick is not to sell a log. The thing is to do the value added. If it's going to be made into furniture or trusses or whatever, do it at home to provide employment and increase the value of that wood before it's exported. That's part of the, what they try to drive for. Well, I'd like to just, we've got a few minutes left here, I'd like to talk about sustainability. That's a big word now that we have applied to many things, agriculture as well, the sustainable. And what are the factors that we, worldwide sustainability is something we have to come into. There's a need on tree planting, there's really a need for like a Marshall Plan, because it's not economic. The individual farmer is not going to be able to plant the number of trees we need worldwide, so we need some gigantic project that's led by NATO or one of the big organizations of the world, the Organization for Food and Agriculture. So what does a Christian, or what is your congregation, do any of your congregations ever talk about what they can do to help reforestry or parks or trails or anything, natural resources?
There are a number of places in Wisconsin where you see forests planted by school children back so many years ago, and they're all grown up now.
They've got great, they had Trees for Tomorrow program started by 1940. A couple of my classmates work on that. Mm-hmm. Great program, and school forests were very common around Wisconsin. Well, we could have church forests, couldn't we? What bothers me is some of these things we're talking about that are critical points of the world, and I have always had in my mind this phrase, who speaks for the church? We don't hear much in our church synods or anywhere else about a policy on resource management or things like this, and I think we're going to get to the time where we're going to need it. And when we do, we need to have our thinking caps on to contribute what we can, because the churches of America are a great force, but they don't apply themselves to this particular subject of resource management. Well, we got into this the other day talking about it, and people quickly pointed out about the need for legislation, how hard it is to get legislation that'll allow you either to harvest or allow you to plant, all these types of things. And from it always seems to end up with economics. And I know I've been on the board of a number of nonprofits and other organizations, and it seems that you get done with all the long discussion, it gets down to the dollar sign, and can we afford it, or where are we going to get the money? As Christians, that should not always be the overbearing thing, but in the world we live in, it seems to be.
Do you think we should stop and use artificial trees for our Christmas trees?
One of the words I've got on here somewhere is substitute material. You raise a lot of Christmas trees, right?
Yes.
Big business.
I give a Christmas tree to the church every year.
Oh, good.
Is plastic trees a good use of resources?
Maybe.
Plastic and oil and all that stuff.
But you use it for 25 years.
Yeah. We still got to do that sooner or later.
I went over to a friend of mine's house one night and I said, "Oh, beautiful tree you got, Christmas tree." He said, "It's a fake." I was fired in fireplace. That's a fake.
Even my fish tank is fake. I put in a VCR. I cleaned the tank that
way. We're coming into it. But we all want to think more about this whole matter of sustainability. And it seems like a hard word, but what you're saying is substitute materials. Now, the industry I work with, utility poles, were Western Red Cedar, Douglas fir poles, treated with my chemical. Now, they've gotten so expensive and they're getting scarce, and start looking at poles. They're made of metal, they're made of plastic, they're made of aluminum, steel, all these things. And that's substitute materials are coming in. 2x4s in public buildings now, they're using a lot of aluminum 2x4s, things like that. So there's a lot of substitution taking place. Some it's subtle and others happening fast.
What then is if you use aluminum, you're going to run out of that too eventually.
Yeah. A lot of bauxite though.
Yeah.
That's a big thing in Norway, they always have all that free electric power. Anybody else have any other?
And they're also using bark this day and age.
Bark, yeah.
One time, Simpson was on weekends, you could get all the bark you wanted. You hauled it.
Now you
pay, I think it's $13.
There's a joke about that, you know. The meatpacking industry used to have a slogan, "We use all of the hog, including the squeal."
Yeah.
And the industry, the wood preserving, the wood industry came along and said, "We use all the tree, including the bark."
Yeah.
There's another St. Peter story, though, before we adjourn. And St. Peter was showing this group of people through the heaven, everything was beautiful and gorgeous and everything. And one of them said, "Well, what, those people over there, there's a big high fence around them, they're in a corral there." He said, "Well, they're from Holden Village, they keep wanting to go home on the weekend." Thank you all for coming. Have a good day.
Oh, you too.